Okay, we are having kids class. All the kids come upstairs.
19 years. Okay, Krishna, thank you for coming here on Sunday morning or afternoon, whatever you call it. So we had to make changes in our timing. Thank you for accommodating that change. I guess few devotees have a little conflict with this time, so some of them will not be able to join us. So this schedule will remain till maybe mid-February. So after that we'll move back to our original timing, maybe Saturday evening. So we'll start with the invocation prayers. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurahatshe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare So, we'll continue with our journey towards the next topic after we discussed last couple of sessions on why do bad things happen to good people, or sometimes the other way. So, our next, so as a recap, so we discussed various karma and the reaction. Karma is the various category of action, good action, bad action, and the action which we kind of ended up with doing the action which does not bring reaction. So karma, vikarma, and akarma. Karma means doing good activities by following the rules and regulation of scripture. Vikarma is doing whimsical activities by rejecting the rules and regulation of scripture. And akarma is doing the activity which does not bring reaction. So our today's topic will be focused on what does really akarma mean. And based on different actions, we said there are different reactions. Sometimes there is an instant reaction. You do the action and immediately one gets the reaction. And sometimes it's a little delayed reaction. It may come within few days, few months. Sometimes it's a longer delay, maybe in few years. And sometimes it's a really delayed reaction, can come maybe in the next few lives. So there are various reactions based on the different type of action. And akarma is which does not bring reaction, means to spiritualize our pious activities. Now, Bhagavad Gita deals with five main subject matters. So by now everybody should know what are those five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita. Right?
Question. I have one question before one. You say when we die, along with soul, mind will also go inside. If you did more so many mistakes, you'll go to Narka. By the time soul and along with soul, mind will also go inside. But when we go Vaikuntha, that time also along with soul, that mind is going with...
That time, when one realizes its spiritual position, that time the physical mind, the material mind, does not go with that. So the soul right now is covered with 8 material elements.
Yeah.
5 gross material elements and 5 subtle material elements. 3 subtle material elements. So mind is also a subtle material element. Once one realizes its spiritual position or the goes back to the spiritual world, so he drops off its material mind and then he attains his own spiritual position. In that spiritual position, he has his own spiritual savrupa. So the mind is within this material world. And once one gets into the association of this material world, we are given this dress. So understood that analogy, right? That part, that we are given this dress to come within this environment, to live within this environment. And when we are in contact with this material world, and then we come in contact with the three modes of material nature also, the goodness, passion and ignorance. And based on the contact with those, we keep going through various conceptions of life. So in the 15th chapter, there is a very nice verse which I quoted. As the air carries aroma, the living entity carries different conceptions of life. So it goes from one life form to another life form. Right? So if somebody has this very strong desire, I want to live like this, enjoy like this. So we develop that kind of conception. And the material nature provides that facility. That okay, this is what your desire is. Even though after getting a human form of life, if somebody wants to live like an animal, so the material nature provides that facility. That okay, this is your concept of life. You want to eat like this, live like this. Better you take this dress, where you can freely enjoy like that.
Once soul goes to Vaikuntha, that mind, is it going to destroy?
That mind drops off. So there is a Viraja river. Okay, that is the border between the material world and the spiritual world. So the living entity, the soul, drops off its material elements that time, the material mind also.
And then that mind vanishes totally.
Right. So in one sense we can say everything, this material elements destroyed, right? You can make up the material elements, mix the material element and make any form. And then you can destroy that and bring the original elements. Our body, we may not see there is water.
No,
there is a dust in that.
No.
No. See, there is raw material and a finished product. Just think of a raw material. Right now your body is like a finished product, but it's made up of the raw materials. And when one dies, what happens? This finished product mixes up with those basic raw materials. It becomes dust, right? So who knows the five topics of Bhagavad Gita? By now everybody should know the five topics. Mataji. This is your second series. Jiva, Ishwara, Kala, Prakriti and Karma. Okay, so these are the five topics. So we discussed those five topics in our previous sessions. Now, along with this five topics, there is something other described in Bhagavad Gita, which is how to connect with the Supreme Lord. So Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. Sambandha is understanding the relationship, theoretically understanding the relationship. Prayojana is ultimate goal, achieving that. So after theoretically understanding, achieving that. And in between is the process. After understanding, okay, I want to achieve this thing. What is the process to attain that? So for example, if somebody see a car ad, okay, so you, let's say you see a car advertisement and then you think, oh, I want to get this car. So you theoretically develop a relationship. I want to buy Cadillac. So final goal, so that is sambandha. You have theoretically decided the relationship. Final goal is now I want to get that, I want to bring that car home, get the keys of that car. That is prayojana. Now from sambandha to prayojana, in between the process. So now after deciding I want to get this car, till the time you finally get the keys of that car, in between there is a process. So you have to go to the dealership, finalize the detail, which particular trim level you want to buy, which particular features you want to buy, are you going to pay the cash or you have to acquire a loan, right? So all those details in between, you work out all those details. So the process, that is called Abhideya. So same way, from Jiva and Ishvara, we understood that, okay, we are all spirit souls, living entities, and we have a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So theoretically understanding that portion, sambandha, and prayojana is to ultimately attain that final destination, attain the relationship, revive our spiritual relationship and go back to the kingdom of God. That is the prayojana. And in between, how we do that, right, after understanding, till attaining that relationship, what is the process, how we attain that, that is called Abhideya. So that Abhideya is what is Krishna describing as the whole yoga process. So in Bhagavad Gita, there is different type of yogas described. There is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So these are discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And all the major scriptures, right, all the Vedic scriptures, they deal with these different topics. Now, when we say yoga, when we use the word yoga, what comes in mind? That's a very common understanding, right? When we think of yoga, some physical exercise, some postures, or somebody is standing upside down on his head, Shirshasana, somebody doing some other particular asana, so that comes in mind. And what else comes in mind sometime? Somebody with some sadhu with matted hairs, dhoti and something, and sitting in the Himalayas doing some austerity, right? Or thinking of meditation, somebody sitting in a posture and just closing the eyes, trying to negate the mind, empty the mind. What else? So there are three major things people talk about when we talk about yoga. I get generally three different answers, three categories. One is the physical exercise, right, which we call as yoga, some asanas. Second is some yogi in the Himalayas doing some tapasya. Third one is some siddhis. Somebody is able to walk on the water. Somebody is able to walk on the fire. Right? Some people do this kind of shows. See, I'm able to walk on the water. And sometimes people will put the fire coals, the burning coals, and somebody will walk on that. And then somebody can raise himself up in the air. Somebody sitting on the ground, then he will lift himself up few feet in the air. So that is called siddhis, mystic powers. So these are the broad three categories people generally talk about when we say yoga. But now, is that really yoga? So when we talk about yoga, let's first discuss what is not yoga. So today, the yoga world has become very famous, very popular. All around the world, there are yoga studios. People thinking, oh, we are doing yoga. So, and there are a lot of books published on yoga. And mainly when people talk about yoga, is from the health benefit point of view. They think yoga means it will give you health, physical well-being of yourself. Or at the most, sometime people will talk about yoga for peace of mind. to relieve from anxiety. So there are book yoga for blood pressure, yoga for physical and mental health. There are many crazy ideas, yoga for kittens, tennis yoga, yoga for pregnancy, yoga for weight loss. So these are all the different yoga, and a lot of people doing some kind of severe austerities. Okay, in either doing some yogic posture in too cold environment or too hot environment. So that is most popularly known as yoga these days. And what is the ultimate purpose when people do that? Sometimes it's just to torture your body. Somebody think, oh, I'm such a great austere person. Right? I can do so much austerity. Or I can do this particular posture. See, nobody else can do. And what is the purpose behind that? To get some fame, attention. So people will do a lot of austerity, develop some immunity and what do you call as anyways. So then they will come out in the public and do that as a public show. So people will go, oh, you are so great. And people will throw money. So people make it as a business to earn the livelihood. There may be many shows on TV. People come and then they start their TV shows. They are invited to the big, big shows. See, this person can do such a great miracles kind of thing. So Baba Ramdev, I recently heard, he does a lot of yoga thing, right? He proposes, or you do this asana, that asana for physical health and all that. He himself was standing in the line to deposit money after this currency exchange came. After a few minutes, he fell down. He got unconscious, just standing in the line. I don't know, it was some kind of a stunt to get publicity or to get attention or... So this is the kind of things happen. Now this is nowhere as an authorized yoga system, right? What people do these kind of things. Put your head inside and get it covered. And people are watching and they will throw money. Doing the show as, oh, I can lift myself up in the air. Somebody walking on the coals or through the water. So now what really yoga is? So Krishna, or the before that, so scriptures define the meaning of yoga. What does the yoga really mean? It comes from the root word yuj. Yuj means to unite. So that is the purpose of yoga, to unite. Unite whom with whom? Joining the living entity with the Supreme Lord. Joining the soul with the super soul. Atma ka paramatma se milan. That is the real meaning of yoga. Now whenever Krishna uses this word yoga in Bhagavad Gita, it's in this context. So Krishna says, let me go back, I quoted one verse here. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, tapasvya adhiko yogi, jnanabhyo api mato adhikah, karmibhyasch adhiko yogi, tasmat yogi bhava arjuna. So better than the austere person, tapasvyo adhiko yogi. The yogi is better than an austere person. Jnana abhyapi adhiko yogi, the person who is just trying to gain knowledge, he's just trying to theoretically gain knowledge, better than that is a yogi. Karmibhyasch adhiko yogi, the person who is just engaged in material activities, fruitive activities, better than that is a yogi. Tasmat yogi bhava arjuna, so in all the situations become a yogi. So Krishna is telling Arjuna to become a yogi. Now the yogi is not just doing, again, what we said, what is not yoga. Not just doing some physical exercise or gaining some mystic power. So That is what Krishna describing as yoga. So the Agni Puran defines the word yoga perfect union of Jivatma with Paramatma is yoga. That is from Agni Puran, direct reference. So now what is yoga? Before that, let's briefly discuss to whom yoga applies, to whom these principles of various yoga applies and who can follow. So there are different type of human beings. We described there are 8.4 million species of life, right? Among 8.4 million species of life, there are 400,000 is different categories of different species of human being. And it's not based on the variation in physical attributes, it's based on the level of consciousness, how the various human beings are categorized. So if we want to understand various human beings, let's just look at this chart here. So one category is the lawbreakers, who do not follow any rules and regulations given by God. So those are generally called as atheists. They don't believe in existence of God. They do not believe in the laws given by God. So their main philosophy is do as you like. In law breaking category, there are further two subcategories. There is a person who breaks the law and he does not have any moral principles also. I do not believe in God, I do not believe in the laws of God, and I do not care what others think. Just do what you like. I will do what I like. So there is no morality, no God in picture, no principles of God. Just do what you like. So that is first category. There is no moral principles also. And there may be some other category who does not believe in the laws of God, who does not believe in God, but may have some moral principle. Oh, we should follow the morality. We should have some basic moral principles. We should not try to bother others. We should not harm others, disturb others. So those kind of things. Now, but what kind of morality is that? When we talk about morality, it's also a very relative term. What one person may think of morality, from other person's perspective, it may be totally immoral thing. Can it be? One person may think, oh, it's perfectly moral to do this. Another person may consider it completely immoral activity. So I will give few examples. Let's say divorce. 50-70 years back, even in Western countries, divorce was not heard of. Right? People will have certain moral values, family values, and they understood the family values. So getting separated was considered as an immoral activity. In our Vedic culture, it is still considered immoral activity. Now, this getting separation, divorce, is a completely acceptable thing. Okay, you don't get along, just get separated. What is the problem? That's the current philosophy. So, what was immoral 50-70 years back, that activity is considered perfectly moral now. Abortion. Few years back, 20-30 years back, abortion was a big, considered as a very sinful activity, very immoral activity. Now, people think, oh, getting abortion is very normal. You don't want the baby right now? Get rid of it. And there is a lot of debates going on. One party want to ban abortion, one party promotes abortion. Republicans want to go one way, Democrats want to go one way. So, and again from Vedic point of view, this is completely immoral activity. Now the immoral activities, it's not very new philosophy. The law abiders, sorry, the law breakers and having completely immoral principle. It's not a very new philosophy. There was a big sage in the olden times also, Charvak Muni. His philosophy was, as long as you are alive, live life king size. Beg, borrow or steal, just enjoy. It sounds very interesting to the ears, right? Just enjoy, live life king size. Don't worry about any principles, don't worry about what others think. So if somebody says, what about soul? What about the rebirth? What about the sinful reaction? So his philosophy was, when the body is burnt into ashes, everything is finished. Who has seen the next life? Who has seen the soul? Who has seen the God? Don't worry about all that, just enjoy. So that philosophy is always there. People will want to hear that kind of thing. Just, oh, he's speaking on my behalf, for my benefit. Just enjoy, no restriction. So based on, apart from this lawbreaker could be completely immoral, but they could still follow some moral principles. Now let's say, what is this morality without God? Right? Somebody may say, okay, I want to be a very moral person. Oh, I don't do anything bad to others. I just earn my living, then in the night I come, drink 2 pegs and go to sleep. I don't trouble anybody. So what is wrong in that? Right? Some people may say that. Oh, I'm just doing with my money and I don't trouble anybody. What is the problem? So morality without God is, I will explain with this one example. So let's say there are a few thieves. They rob a bank, steal all the money, and they run to the forest. They escape the cops and everything. Finally, they arrive in the forest. Now, when they arrive in the forest, they sit down under a tree and they say, okay, we have got all this money. We stole all this money from the bank. Now, let's divide this money honestly among ourselves. So that is morality without God. Now, these thieves, first of all, they stole somebody's money. Right? So there is no morality there. And now they are saying, let's divide this honestly among ourselves. That is the example of morality without God. So when we don't acknowledge who am I and there is existence of God and what are the rules and regulation, the laws given by God, and I think, oh, I can do whatever I want. I just don't want to harm others, don't want to trouble others, but I can do whatever I like. That's of no value. Now, beyond that, there is another category, which is the law abiders, the theists who believe in the existence of God, who follow the rules, the laws given by God, and they live their life accordingly. Now, for a person who is trying to live the life as per the laws given by God, that's where this principle of akarma comes in picture. How one should develop this consciousness of doing the activity by connecting the relationship with Supreme Lord. So, I already mentioned this one, the Charvak philosophy. Yavat jivet sukham jivet, rinam kritva ghritam pivet, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya kutah punaragmano bhavet. He says, yavat jivet, till when you live, sukham jivet, live happily. Rinam kritva dhritam pivet, beg, borrow or steal, but one should drink or live happily. Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya, when the body dies, it's burned into ashes, it becomes ashes. Kutah punar agmano bhavet, who has seen what happens after that? Who has seen the soul? Who has seen the next life? And there are this hard-working materialists, sometimes they have no understanding of God. They may be trying to live with little moral principles. So for the law abiders, the first principle comes as karma. Okay, so just to caution you here, when we use the word karma, it really does not mean karma yoga. There is a difference in karma and karma yoga. Karma is doing any activity, right? With the desire of result. Somebody may be trying to follow the rules and regulation given in the scripture, but it's still doing the activity with the result. There is no yoga involved yet. Remember the word yoga means to connect with the Supreme. So in karma, there is sakam karma and the nishkam karma. Sakam, with the desire. So doing the activity with the desire to gain the result, that is called sakam. And the nishkam, doing the activity without the desire to enjoy the results. And the nishkam karma is the starting of karma yoga. So sakam karma is basically, one is desirous of getting the fruitive result. One thinks, okay, I'm doing this, in exchange I want this result. And the nishkama is, one thinks, I just want to do my duty, I do not have any desire. What happens if I get the result or I don't get the result? Like in the scriptures, there is a lot of rules and regulation geared towards gaining the result. Okay, that is called karmakanda. Karmakanda philosophy is, you do this, you can get this result. You do this type of puja, you will gain this. You do this yajna, you gain this. You do this fasting, you get that result. So 99% of the whole Vedic scripture is focusing towards that. Okay, you want to live happily in the material world, you follow these principles. By following these, you can live happily within this material world. You can gain whatever you desire. For example, somebody want to gain a lot of money. Okay, you worship this devata. You want to gain good health, you worship this devata. Somebody want to get a good husband, okay, you worship this devi. Somebody want to get a good wife, okay, you worship this devata. So like that, there are so many of these karmakandi principles defined. So all these are geared towards gaining the result by following the rules and regulation. But this karmakanda philosophy is very binding, because as long as we are doing even the good action, we have to come back to get the reaction. As I described, both good action or bad action bring reaction. Somebody do bad action, he has to come back to suffer the reaction. If somebody do good action, he has to come back still to get the awards of that, right? To enjoy the reactions, to enjoy the results. So the karmakanda philosophy is like, so once there was a Russian scientist, he did one experiment. He put a mouse in a trap, put two terminals in that. One terminal, if the rat presses one terminal, one door opens and a cheese comes in, a piece of cheese. So the rat enjoys. He presses second terminal, the rat gets a shock. So now this rat is trying to figure out, okay, I should press this lever, I should avoid that lever, I should press this, avoid that. So that's like exactly like a karmakandi person. A karmakandi person who is following all these rituals, he's thinking, oh, I want to do good activity, let me follow this principle and avoid the bad things, bad activity. So I will do good, get good result, avoid bad, stay away from bad reaction. So same way this rat is trying to figure out, okay, let me press this lever, get cheese, enjoy, avoid pressing this lever, don't get shocked. So after some time, this person switched the terminals. So now the door earlier, where from the terminal where cheese was coming, now he presses that, shock is coming. The other terminal where shock was coming, now press that, cheese is coming. So the rat is going back and forth. Oh, I should press this, avoid that, press this, avoid that. After some time, he left the door open. But the rat is so much into this thing, oh, I should press this, avoid that, press this button, avoid that. He even doesn't know the door is open and I can go out of this cage and enjoy anywhere outside completely. So same way the karmakandi person, the too much materialistic, ritualistic person, he get entrapped in this philosophy. I want to do good karma, follow all these rituals, regulation, enjoy the life, and avoid doing bad activity so I can avoid the sinful reaction. So he get too entangled in that, he even doesn't know what is the ultimate purpose of life. The ultimate purpose is not to just get good and avoid bad. Ultimate purpose is to get out of this cycle of the whole birth and death and go back to the spiritual world. So apart from the karma, the karmakanda philosophy, the next one comes the karma yoga. So what is karma yoga? So he said karma is doing the activity, nishkam karma is doing the activity, but don't bother about the results. But the nishkam karmi still does not know where the result is going. He is not surrendering, or he is not connected with the Lord yet. His results are not offered to the Lord yet. So karma yoga is, one is still doing the activity as he likes, but he offers the result to the Supreme Lord. So once one is doing the activity but offering the result to the Supreme Lord, by offering the result he is getting connected with the Supreme Lord. So that becomes, then his action becomes as karma yoga. Like somebody may work very hard, and then at the end, whatever income he gets, he may give some portion as a charity, donate something to the temple, donate something for the purpose of serving the Lord. Somebody may donate that, okay, I will sponsor these many books, so these books can be distributed. Somebody may sponsor Bhagavad Gita sets, Bhagavatam sets. So he is doing his activity, but he is utilizing his result in the service of Krishna. That becomes karma yoga. So then jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga and bhakti yoga. So we'll discuss these briefly. What are all these different yoga? But the thing to understand, or very important point to understand, is these are not the different processes to attain the same goal. Sometimes people think, oh, you do karma yoga, I do jnana yoga, somebody else is doing bhakti yoga. Ultimately, everything is equal. Everything is same. Ultimately, you are a karma yogi, I am a jnana yogi, or I am a bhakti yogi. So these are not the different processes leading us to the supreme goal, but actually they are like a rungs of the ladder. So different steps of the same ladder, ultimately taking one to the final destination. So in a ladder, let's say at the bottom, we are at the bottom, jiva, and God is at the top. And going from bottom to top, these are the different processes described. So karma yoga is a linking by action, jnana yoga linking by knowledge, ashtanga yoga linking by the meditation process, and bhakti yoga is linking by devotion. So these are the different rungs of the same ladder, taking us higher and higher to connect with the Supreme Lord. It's like the, if there is a 100-story building, there may be a staircase which goes from first floor to 10th floor, but then after, at the 10th floor, person goes around, get another staircase, goes to the 20th floor, then goes around, finds another staircase, goes to the further up, and there may be another staircase which goes directly from bottom to top. So these different processes are like that. So karma yoga, yes, it helps to start our connection with the Supreme Lord, but it doesn't take us all the way to the final destination, because one is still attached to its work. One may be doing some activity, but offering the result, and then one comes higher, start gaining the knowledge. Okay, I'm doing this action and giving the result. Let me try to understand, let me gain the knowledge where this result is finally going, how its result is being utilized, what is the purpose of serving. And then one goes further, start developing the process of dhyana. Let me focus my mind, absorb my mind in thinking of Krishna. Then finally, let me absorb, engage all my activities in the service of Krishna. So we discuss this sakam karma in detail, right? They follow the scriptures, but have some idea of the soul, may have some understanding of the rebirth and God, but don't have clear understanding. They perform very ritualistic, pious activities with the intention to gain the result. We discuss this example. So karma yoga is offering the results to the Lord. One may be still attached to the result or the actual work. So then people quote this very famous verse from Bhagavad Gita, that ultimate purpose, ultimate conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is just do your work. But nowhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, just do your work. So this 247, this is chapter 2, text 47. Krishna says, Karmanne vadhikaraste ma faleshu kadachana. Ma karma phala heturbhur mate sangho astava karmani. So here, the first portion, Karmanne eva adhikaraste. You have the right to do your duty. So you have the right to do your duty. Nobody is denying. Yes, you can do your work. But ma faleshu kadachana. Don't get attached to the result of your work. And after that, ma karma phala heturbhur. And don't think yourself to be the cause of the result. So two very interesting and important points here. First thing is, don't get attached to the result. Second thing is, don't think you are the cause of result. But these are the exactly two things we do. Whenever we do some activity, some action, some work, we have the intention. Oh, I am doing this work, I should be getting this return. Isn't it? A student may think, oh, I am studying hard. My intention is, I want to get first grade. Or, I want to get first rank. If, okay, I should not have the desire, then at least I should have the sense of accomplishment. See, I did this. I am the cause. Because of this, work got complete. So even though somebody may not be attached to the result, but they want to get the sense of appreciation or the sense of accomplishment. Because of this, this project got finished. If I was not involved, this will never finish. This problem will never be solved. For example, in a cricket match, last over, this is the 20, 24, 26, whatever runs needed. For the last ball of the over, a six score needed. Somebody comes and hits a sixer and wins the match. Now this player, what is his consciousness? What is his thinking? See, I am the cause of winning this match. If I did not hit the sixer, we'll lose the match. So I am the cause. So that proprietorship, that controllership mentality, generally we get. So Krishna says, don't get attached to the result and don't think you are the result of that. Why not? Why we should not think? If somebody think, okay, if I should not think I'm entitled to the result, or I should think about the result, or if I should not even think about that I am the doer, right? Because of me this work got complete. Then why I should even do? Why even should I act? Do the work. Better I just sit down, idle, don't do anything. So Krishna throws another bouncer here. The last part of the shloka, he says, Nata sango astava akarmani. Don't get attached to not doing your work. So don't think that, okay, I'm not entitled to the result and I'm not entitled to the appreciation. Why should even I act? Don't even think about that also. Don't get attached to not doing your activity. Do your work without the desire of action, without the desire of result. That is the starting of Karma Yoga. Still, it's not Karma Yoga yet. This is the starting of Nishkama Karma, as I described earlier. So further, then Krishna describes, what is Karma Yoga? Mai sarvani karmani sannyasa dhyatma chetasa nirashir nirmamo bhutva yudhasva vigatah jvara. This is Bhagavad Gita 3.30. This is now from the chapter titled Karma Yoga. So chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita is titled Karma Yoga. So in that chapter, Krishna takes further from Nishkama Karma to Karma Yoga. What is Karma Yoga means? Mai sarvani karmani. Sanyas adhyatma chetasa. Your consciousness should be that of surrendering the result to me. Surrendering all your result to me. Nirashir nirmama bhutva. Don't become attached to the result. Don't become the proprietor of your work. Don't get the doership mentality. But still, yudhasva bhigata jvara. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, you should still fight with full enthusiasm. And same way Krishna is telling everybody, we should not get attached to the result, surrender all the result to Krishna. But still, one should act with full enthusiasm. One should not get kind of laziness attitude that, okay, what is the point in working? So that is Karma Yoga. So surrendering, connecting ourselves with the Supreme Lord by surrendering our result. Next is Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is the process of linking with the Supreme by acquiring knowledge. So from Karma Yoga, one moves on to higher as Jnana Yoga. So if I should not be thinking about the result, surrender the result to the Supreme Lord, better let me understand who is the Supreme Lord, who am I, what is my real position. So trying to acquire knowledge. So a Jnana Yogi, they may understand, they may read the scripture, Upanishads, Puranas and all that, try to gain all the theoretical knowledge. Okay, this material world is made up of 24 different elements and we are the Jiva, and there is a Paramatma and we have a relationship with that. So theoretically one may understand all that, but just theoretically understanding may not be enough. Because when somebody is too much attached to just Jnana, somebody is running behind Jnana, most of the time people become attached to the impersonal Brahman. So we discussed in the very earlier sessions, Supreme Lord has three different aspects: Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan. As an impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the energy of the Lord, the effulgence of the Lord. Then localized feature as Paramatma, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So like that, so the Jnani, even though he is trying to acquire all that knowledge, but his conception becomes limited to the impersonal Brahman. That God is Sarvvyapak, he is Antaryami, he knows everything, but he doesn't have any form. He is just some energy. And Krishna says in chapter 12, text 5, the people who are attached to the impersonal Brahman, their path is very troublesome. Ultimately, they have to go beyond that to understand the complete picture, complete understanding about the Lord. So the just theoretical Jnana is not the ultimate goal, because one may have a lot of knowledge, but if somebody does not practically apply that knowledge, it's limited. There is a difference in Jnana and Vijnana. Krishna specifically says these two different words in Bhagavad Gita at many places. Jnana Vijnana Sahitam. So the knowledge has to be Jnana and Vijnana. The theoretical knowledge as well as the realized knowledge. And how the Jnana becomes Vijnana? By practically applying it. Otherwise it's useless. For example, if I tell you about mango tree, all the details about mango tree, or this tree is very nice, its fruit is delicious, if you nurture this tree you will get this delicious fruit which you can enjoy. So you understand all that, so you understood everything about the tree, but now next day you go and cut that tree. So is that all knowledge any meaningful? Right? So even though you got all that knowledge, but you did not apply that knowledge, there is no point. So same way, if somebody just understanding, oh, I am, this body is temporary, I am Jiva and there is Paramatma, I should have a relationship with him. But after understanding all that, if one just acts again on the bodily platform, is that any meaningful? You want a test? So we discussed, we are not this body, we are the spirit soul. And what is the size of the soul? One 10,000th of the tip of the hair. Right? So we are the living entity and the soul is that much small in size. Now all of you raise hand who are 3 foot higher. Right? So, see, in our day-to-day life, we act on the bodily platform. We said we are not this body. This body is 3 feet higher, but in originality, the spirit soul is minute in size. But still, in our dealing, that consciousness, that false identification is so deep, we always work based on that identification.
So it's not that easy for us.
right? It's not that easy. So we need to apply that, right? So gaining the knowledge itself is not the ultimate purpose. So we are the spirit soul. Spirit soul has no designation, no American, Indian, African. But we work based on that again, day in, day out. We say, oh, I'm an Indian. I'm this person, that person. I belong to that nationality or that specific part. So it's very hard to come out of that level of consciousness. So we are trying in this process, we are practicing that process, but it doesn't mean we have ultimately reached the final goal or the final destination. It's just the beginning. It's just the starting point. So, from jnana, after understanding that, one thinks, okay, let me go a step further and try to absorb my mind or at least get rid of the material thoughts. Purify my consciousness. Try to avoid all these mundane thoughts. And for that, person may try to do the meditation. Meditation is most popularly known as, people think meditation means to get rid of the thoughts. Clear the mind from all the materialistic thoughts. But that's also a limited understanding of dhyana. Dhyana doesn't mean just getting rid of bad thoughts. That's half part. Getting rid of the bad thoughts, additionally bringing in the thoughts, focusing our attention on the Supreme Lord. Until we are doing that part, it's not meditation. See, we are concerned about just purifying the mind or making the mind peaceful. Right? So that is also a selfish agenda behind it. Oh, I want to just get rid of my tension. But there is no spirituality involved then. There is no connection with the Supreme Lord. So meditation means thinking about the Lord, absorbing our consciousness into the Supreme Lord. That is dhyana. People think dhyana means, oh, focus on a dot on the wall or a flame of candle. That's not dhyana. Yes, it can help us getting rid of the bad thought, remove all those mundane thoughts. But it has not gone to the positive side yet. And that meditative process also is not complete in itself. Somebody may be trying to control the mind, but still from that level of achievement, one may fall down. And there is a example of Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra was trying to practice this Ashtanga Yoga, right? The meditation process. And he did austerity for thousands of years. And what happened? And then Menaka came with one tinkling sound of the ankle bell. His meditation broke. All the thoughts which were sleeping in the back of the mind, they came out. Because of our consciousness, we have done certain activities in the past and we have certain conceptions. Those conceptions may be hiding back of the mind, but they come out as we experience something, as we come in touch with a certain thing. Somebody watches a movie and then somebody start planning, oh yeah, I used to go like that, I used to eat like that, I used to go to a vacation like that, so maybe I should try to enjoy in that way. So all those conceptions start coming. So even though Vishwamitra was practicing deeply all this meditation, but his meditation broke, because in the previous part of his life he was a king and he used to enjoy in a certain way, and all those thoughts started coming. So process of Ashtanga Yoga is a strictly following certain rules and regulations, and in this particular age and time, following the Ashtanga Yoga as described in the scriptures is next to impossible to follow. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6 is dedicated towards this Dhyana Yoga process. Krishna describes how one should practice Dhyana Yoga. One should go to the forest, lay a kusha grass, sit on that with all the body full erect, your back, neck and the nose should all be in a straight line. One should focus on the tip of the nose. Try to ignore all the thoughts from the mind and then bring the focus on the Supreme Lord. And on top of that, one should try to practice celibacy. One should try to remain in a secluded place without any family attachments. So how many of the yogis which we hear of, somebody says, oh, I'm doing yoga. Is there anybody who may be following these principles? First of all, here, it's hard to find a secluded place. Right? It's not possible to find a secluded place. Even you go to the jungle, deep in the jungle, still there is a planes flying in the air. Boom, boom. There is no peace and serenity anywhere. So this Ashtanga Yoga process is also a very difficult process and it always danger of falling down. And then we talk about the mystic siddhis. People think, oh, I have this mystic power, that mystic power. So there are, definitely there are mystic powers. There are siddhis. But that siddhi is not the ultimate goal of the Ashtanga Yoga process. So the Ashtanga Yoga process is, can somebody describe all the limbs of the Ashtanga Yoga? Ashtanga. Ashtanga Yoga means the eight limbs of the yoga process. So these eight limbs are Yam, Niyam, anybody knows? So Yam, Niyam, Pratyahar, Pranayam, Asana, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi. So these are the eight limbs. And by following this practice for a long duration of time, just controlling the mind, controlling the senses, one can develop some supernatural powers. And one can do some things which are impossible to do from a normal standards. So there are eight siddhis listed here in that way. Anima, Laghima, Mahima, Prapti, Ishita, Prakamya, Vashita, Kama, Vashita. So this is anima. One may become smaller. One can become so small that it can enter inside the stone. And Laghima Siddhi, one can become too light. One can fly on in the air or one can walk on the water. So one can become too light. This Mahima Siddhi, one can become so heavy. And then Prapti Siddhi, one can just raise his hand and bring something from far away without anybody noticing. Sometimes people do this miracles. Some babas, right? They will just move their hand in the air and get something and this, produce some dust or bring some fruit or something like that. So it's like a prapti siddhi. Without somebody noticing, one can raise his hand and bring something. Sometimes some yogi will do. They will move their hand and bring some apple or some, what do you call it?
Magic.
Gold, little. Right? So, but is that the ultimate purpose of doing mystic power or gaining the mystic siddhi? So people do a lot of austerity, gain some supernatural power, they will come in the public and do a show. See, I'm so great. So once there was a yogi, Prabhupada's time. So Prabhupada's
that's
disciple.
That's not like magical tricks.
It's not magical tricks. Sometimes people really can do that.
Really
sometimes people can extend their hand and bring anar from Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean they TV, but is it really feasible? Because somebody say, you know, it's magical trick. They say magicians karte hain. They always have a trick.
Right. So,
behind that.
First of all, in this time, it's very hard to find somebody who can really do something. Most of the time, it's just a trick, or they will have hidden somewhere and they'll just come bring out.
Mm.
But it's possible. People can actually have this mystic power. In the scriptures, there are so many stories. And we know Lord Hanuman. So Hanuman is known as, what is the, when the people sing Hanuman Chalisa, there is one stanza, Ashta Siddhi Navanidhi Kedata. So Ashta Siddhi, he has all the eight mystic powers. He demonstrated in various pastimes.
Yeah.
Right? When he was entering into the Lanka, he became so small and he went through the under the door of the Lanka without anybody's noticing. And then when he needed to bring the Sanjeevani, he became huge. And still he was able to fly. So he can become like a big mountain, too heavy, and he can become too light. So the purpose of the mystic Siddhi is not to do a show, even though Lord Hanuman has all the mystic powers. But was he proud of his mystic powers? Did he start claiming, see, I have become God, I am God? What was he doing? He was always serving Lord Ram. Never claimed, oh, I am equal to Ram, or I am God also. Why are you worshipping Ram? Worship me. Hanuman doesn't do that, but people make Hanuman also, that oh, Hanuman is also God. Rather than worshipping Ram, let's worship Hanuman. Hanuman is not pleased if somebody worship him. He is pleased when you worship Lord Ram. He is known as Ram Sevak, servant of Lord Ram. So people can get all these mystic power. Ishita Siddhi, he can create its will, at its will, a planet. So there is another story from the scriptures, from Ramayana. Vishwamitra had the mystic power, he could create a whole new planet. So there was a king, what is his name? He wanted to go to Swarga without getting the pious credit. But he wanted to go to the Swarga. And Vishwamitra created a big ladder for him. That okay, you go, you can attain Swarga, you can go to the heavenly planet. And as he was climbing up, he was reaching Swarga, the demigods became very upset. That how come he doesn't have any pious credit, he is not eligible to enter Swarga, but he is forced to come to Swarga. So they threw him back again. Vishwamitra again started sending him up. So with his mystic power, he is sending him up, demigods are pushing him down. So this is the whole thing going on. Then Vishwamitra, after his frustration, he said, I will create a whole new planet for you, which is in the same level as the Swarga. So a yogi with his mystic power can create a whole new planet. That kind of mystic power is possible to attain. Vashita Siddhi, trying to control somebody, like hypnotism, right? People these days, Ishita, so it's like trying to control somebody. So by controlling, what people want to do, control them and manipulate them and exploit them. That's what is the purpose behind it. It's not that somebody wants to control the terrorist and then act them in a positive way, better way, but it's other way. People want to exploit good people, control them and make them act in a wrong way. Prakamya Siddhi, one can enter at one place and come out from another place. It's like traveling at will. Somebody may enter into the river at, what is the Gandaki River, and come out maybe from, what is it here?
Detroit
River. So, basically traveling at free will. And then Kama Vashita Siddhi. One can contradict the nature. One can make the sun set before its time. One can do some other supernatural thing which is contradicting the nature basically. So, and the Supreme Lord himself has all these powers. Right? He can do all these things. That's why he is God. He can do all these things. He is God so that he can do all these things. But it doesn't mean if somebody can do one of these things, he start claiming, see, I have become God. But people are so unfortunate or so misguided. Somebody does some small trick, some small magic. They don't recognizing the Supreme Lord who is giving this power, but they start considering this Baba or this Dongi as the God. Oh, ye toh Bhagwan ban gaye, he is God. So after this whole thing, the Ashtanga Yoga process, I already described briefly. So the whole Ashtanga Yoga is Yama, Niyam. Yama is controlling the senses. Niyam is following the rules and regulations. So Yama is don'ts. Niyama is do's. So don't do certain things and then do certain principles. So Yama and Niyam. Asan is just the sitting postures. Shirshasan or this asan or that asan. So this yoga, which is most popular today, is a small part of the whole Ashtanga Yoga. And the ultimate purpose of that is not to gain health benefit or peace of mind. Those are the side effects which come by itself. If somebody follows the Ashtanga Yoga process, the Dhyana Yoga, the health benefit and all that comes as a side benefit. That's not the mainstream business of doing the Ashtanga Yoga. Pranayama, controlling the breathing. Pratyahar, controlling the senses from sense objects or from sense enjoyment. Pratyahar means trying to control your eating. Rather than eating too much, that okay, I will control my eating, eat limited. Say we do the, some austerity is fasting on certain days. Right, so that is the purpose of, it's a pratyahar. So one does not want to engage the senses into the sense objects. Avoid eating too much. Don't engage the senses or, for example, eyes into watching some mundane things. Don't engage the sense of hearing into listening to some mundane music. So it's pratyahar. Then dhyana, dharana is concentration. Removing all the bad thoughts, bad energy, focusing on the Supreme Lord. Then dhyana, from dharana, when dharana becomes consistent for a duration, it's become dhyana. And when dhyana solidifies, it continues without any destruction, it becomes samadhi. So in the stage of dhyana, one is trying to control internally, but one may be distracted with the external things. And then samadhi is, one is not bothered from the mind also, and one is not bothered from the external disturbances also. So in the case of Vishwamitra, what was the situation? He was able to control his internal thoughts, but he could not control the external disturbances. Right? And with the external disturbances, finally the internal thoughts also start coming. So Ashtanga Yoga process, as what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, go to a secluded place, regulate your eating, sleeping, lead a life of complete celibacy. So these are the principles described by Krishna. And it's not possible to follow what Krishna says and as a process of Ashtanga Yoga. So in Arjuna says, 5000 years back, when Arjuna heard this whole Ashtanga Yoga philosophy, how to conduct, do this yoga, he said, I cannot do that. It's impossible. I can control the wind, but I cannot control the mind. Mind is so obstinate, so troublesome. So what is our situation compared to Arjuna? If Arjuna expressed inability to carry out this particular process of yoga, who we are in that comparison? So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavanamam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlava. After many, many births, a person who is really in knowledge, he comes to this understanding that Vasudev, he is the Supreme Lord. Such a great soul is very rare. So one may be doing all this karma yoga business, dhyana yoga business, jnana yoga business in previous lives. Finally, who understand in its entirety that Krishna, Vasudev, is the Supreme Lord and I need to develop my relationship with Him. That kind of person is very rare. And that's where the person comes to the stage of Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga, so all the other yoga processes, they have to add the element of Bhakti to gain the complete success. So what is the process of Bhakti Yoga? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. So these are the nine processes, the Navada Bhakti, we mentioned earlier also. So these are the nine stages or the nine steps of Bhakti Yoga. Shravanam, hearing about the Supreme Lord. Kirtanam, glorifying the Supreme Lord. Vishnu Smaranam, always trying to remember the Supreme Lord. Padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Archanam, offering the prayers. Vandanam, offering the various articles in the worship of Supreme Lord. Dasyam, developing a relationship of as a servitorship attitude towards the Supreme Lord. Sakyam, considering the Supreme Lord as our most beloved friend. Atmani Vedanam, surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord. So, after understanding all these various things, what is the most beneficial process recommended for this particular age and time? So there are four yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. So in all the various times there is a Yuga Dharma, a particular process of self-realization recommended for a particular age. So Srimad Bhagavatam describes in 12th canto, Kriteya Dhyayato Vishnu Tretayam Jajato Makha Dwapare Paricharyayam Kalihu Tad Hari Kirtanat. So in the Satayuga, Dhyayato Vishnu, doing the meditation on the Supreme Lord is the recommended process. In Satayuga, the duration of life is big. It's like 100,000 years. So in Satyayuga, duration of average duration of life is 100,000 years. In Treta Yuga, it reduces by factor of 10. So 10,000 years. In Kali Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, it reduces further by 10 factor. It's 1,000 years. And in Kali Yuga, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, further 10 factor. It's 100 years. And as we progress further in Kali Yuga, it's further keep loading and loading. And what is the duration, average life duration now? 70 years. That's the average life duration. If somebody goes to 80, 90, he is... If somebody crosses 100, reaches 100... Century. Sometimes it's like big publicity then. It may come in the newspaper, in the TV shows, or this person is 100 years and he is still living and all that. So in Satyayuga, the process of self-realization is meditation on the Supreme Lord. So that's why we see earlier the yogis, they will do austerity for thousands and thousands of years. And
yeah,
now that's not even possible.
Kali Yuga is now completed only 5,000 years.
Yes.
And in 5,000, a human life standard is from 100 to 70. So Kali Yuga is 430,000 years.
20,000, yes.
Okay. By that time, in 5 years, if you keep on 5,000 years, 30 less. By the end of...
It's not linear, first of all. And scripture says,
by the end
towards
of
the end of Kali Yuga, people's life duration will be so short. During the childhood, they will look like old people. Okay, the life duration will be only teens, 20s.
Now, Utopia also, they have 49 or 45.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, some people go in 30s, some go in 40s, some go in 50s. Average is considered 70.
No, by
there
the
are
of, like after 4
yes.
years.
So scriptures clearly define the duration of life will be so short earlier, towards the end of Kali Yuga.
Duration of life, the average height of a person.
So the height keep going lower and lower. For people will be dwarfs. 2 feet, 3 feet, that will become the maximum height. So earlier, towards the end of Dwapara Yuga, the height was about 8 to 10 feet.
Is it because of their karma?
It's not because of karma, it's everything. It's the whole influence of Kali Yuga. All the main pillars of Dharma, they're destroying. Right? So people are becoming more and more sinful. So everything becomes that reaction. The influence of Kali itself, and people are becoming influenced with that and committing more and more sinful activities. That's why there is more and more suffering increasing day by day. More natural calamities, more diseases, more mental troubles. Right? So either it is Adi Bhautik Klesh, Adi Atmik Klesh, Adi Devik Klesh. From all aspects, it's increasing day by day. Trouble from the body and mind is increasing. Trouble from the others is increasing. Trouble from the higher nature is increasing. So Satya Yuga, that was the principle. Then Treta Yuga, big fire sacrifice. Like, we know the kings, they used to do Ashwamedh Yagya, Ratsuya Yagya. So people will do big sacrifices. That was the process of self-realization. Dwapare Paricharyayam. In Dwapara Yuga, elaborate temple worship. Worshipping the deity in the temple in a big opulence way. Giving the gifts to the deity. Okay, donations and all that. And then Kalyutad Hari Kirtanat. In the Kali Yuga, the process is Hari Kirtanat, the chanting of the holy name. So this whole, all the principles which we discussed, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, it's like a staircase versus the elevator. It's not that one has to take first Karma Yoga, like, okay, first 10 years of my life I will try to do Karma Yoga. Then next 10 years I will try to do Jnana Yoga, then that and then that. One can go like that, but there's no guarantee. And one can directly take the elevator. One can directly begin with the Bhakti Yoga process. And all these things will automatically come. The Jnana and the Vairagya, they are all the children of Bhakti. When Bhakti arises, Jnana ultimately automatically comes. The renunciation automatically comes. So one can either choose, doesn't necessarily have to choose as a step-by-step approach. One can directly take the elevator. And the another distinction between the other processes versus Bhakti Yoga. What do you see there? So in the first picture, there's a monkey carrying its child. In the second picture is a cat carrying its kitten. In both ways, they are carrying. But just look at the difference here. When a monkey baby wants to get hold of the mother or is scared, want to cross something, what he has to do? He has to hold tightly the mother monkey. Otherwise, if he doesn't hold tightly, he may fall down anytime. So all the Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga process is also like that. One is trying to connect with the Supreme Lord, but if one is not careful enough, there is always possibility of falling down. And on the other hand, Bhakti Yoga process is one is surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord is carrying him. Like this cat is carrying the kitten. Cat is carrying the kitten in the mouth. Kitten doesn't have any fear or any worry that, oh, I may fall down. It's the mother's responsibility. She is carrying. So he is completely relaxed. So same way, in the Bhakti Yoga process, when a devotee surrenders unto the Supreme Lord takes the charge. Krishna takes charge. It's his responsibility. He makes sure that you continue on the journey. Yes, we cannot become completely negligent and say, okay, I don't have to follow this rules and regulation. I can do what all whimsical activities and I claim myself as a devotee. So to claim ourselves to be a devotee, yes, there are certain things we have to follow. Otherwise, there is no question of being a devotee if we don't follow those basic principles. So I will just skip this. So in Kali Yuga, as the recommended process is chanting of the holy name. So 500 years back, Lord Krishna came personally in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is considered the combined form of Radha and Krishna. Lord Krishna came in the form of a devotee to teach people in general how to be a devotee. So just by his own example, he taught the principle of chanting the holy name. Spread the chanting of the holy name. It's not that somebody may think, okay, why Krishna has to come personally to teach, or if he is an ordinary person. When we go to school, sometimes the teacher is holding the hand of the baby and writing A, B, C. It doesn't mean the teacher is practicing A, B, C. Teacher is just helping the baby learn A, B, C. So same way the Supreme Lord Himself descends down as showing as His own devotee to show people, to teach people how to become devotee, to spread the glories of the holy name and to spread the Yuga Dharma, which is the chanting of the holy name. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna Himself, spread this Mahamantra. Mahamantra is stated in the scriptures originally itself. It's not that He created something new. The Mahamantra is given in the scripture. At one place it says, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyatha. In the Kali Yuga, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way than the chanting of the name of Hari, chanting of the name of Hari, chanting the name of Hari. And at and Kali Santarana Upanishad, it clearly states, by first mentioning this whole Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Iti Shochkam Namanam, Kali Kalmashah Nashanam. So, in the Kali Yuga, this mantra of 16 syllables can destroy all the ill effects of Kali Yuga. So this mantra is already mentioned in the scriptures. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just brought it out and spread publicly, spread the chanting of the holy name. So that is the part of the Bhakti Yoga, directly taking to the process of Bhakti Yoga by chanting the name of the Lord. So we'll stop here, and next session we'll discuss what are the practical applications of the process of Bhakti Yoga. If we want to progress in bhakti, what are the bare minimum basic things, right? What kind of activities are considered as bhakti? So we'll do that in the next session. We'll stop here. If anybody has any question, we can quickly discuss few questions. No question? You already asked in between. Next week, okay, so that's good question. Next week, we may skip actually. It will be Sunday for next few weeks now, till February, mid-February at least. It will be on Sundays. We will try to start at sharp 11:30. Today, I guess everybody was a little late. Came by 12 or so. But let's try to be on time. We can start at 11:30 and by 1 o'clock and have prasadam. So, till February, mid-February, it will be on Sundays. But next Sunday, we will not have the program because we, our Bhakti Vriksha group, has a service at the temple from other Bhakti Vriksha groups. So, there are two groups, right? Friday and Saturday we used to do. So, other Bhakti Vriksha group, we go every month, once every month for service in the temple on Sundays. So, we are doing that on next Sunday. And all of you are most welcome to join us. And that's part of the bhakti, to do some service for the Lord. So that will be the practical application right there. So if you will like to join. So we'll start around same time, like we start around 1:30 on Sunday for the service. So we cook the feast for whoever comes in the temple to offer to the Lord and serve everybody. Some devotee engage in some other cleanup services. So you're more than welcome to join us next Sunday at the temple. But we will not have our this session on next Sunday. Anybody has any question? Okay, so thank you very much. We'll stop here.